Hey, it's Bill Simmons. We're not just reacting to the NBA playoffs on my podcast. We're also doing it on the Ringer NBA show and the Mismatch podcast. They are coming after some of these NBA playoff games. Check it out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights on the Ringer Podcast Network. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Welcome to the Ringer F1 Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kevin Clark. Max Verstappen wins the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. It's crisis time at Ferrari, and everybody is porpoising. I'm joined by Michael Bauman, my colleague. Michael, what's going on, bud?
I'm bouncing all over the place. My head's being shaken off my neck.
So Daniel Ricciardo said, do you know when the basketball players do a very low bounce? Which, to be clear, in Azerbaijan, in the paddock, they may not know that. They may not know what it looks like when a basketball player does a very low bounce, kind of picking up their dribble is kind of what he's describing. That's what he said is happening to his head the entire time that you're racing in Baku. So there's a nice little analogy for you. We're going to get to the porpoising and what Lewis says and what George says and what Christian Horner says. You won't believe this. Christian Horner has weighed in on the porpoising. He thinks it's overblown. That was Ricardo's way of putting it, is he felt like he was being bounced by a point guard picking up a dribble at half court.
I think Daniel Ricciardo should have a little more faith in the people of the Caucasus region, which has produced more than a few notable NBA players, like Nicholas Skidishvili. But maybe not Azerbaijan specifically.
I was the one who said they probably don't know, but I will say but that's point well taken. It's an exploding sport over there.
I just don't want to get in Europe. Mean letters in Georgian and Azerbaijani.
Well, it's not even Azerbaijan. It's the paddock. It's like the paddock. It's like, you
that's
know,
true.
Do the petrol heads in the paddock, are they sitting around watching the finals? That's all.
No, they're all jealous because they're all short.
We had Spanners and I had a nice little conversation about this the other day. All right. So let's get to this. I don't know where you want to start. I want to start with Ferrari here.
Yeah.
Oof.
Because we can't finish with Ferrari.
We certainly can't finish. We can start strong. Mm-hmm. We can get a pole with Ferrari, but we cannot finish this. Max Verstappen has outscored Charles Leclerc by 80 points in his last five Grand Prix. What's notable about this, Michael Bauman, is that in four of these Grand Prix, Charles Leclerc has been the pole sitter.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting into territory. This is via Sean Kelly. In 2002, Juan Pablo Montoya had five poles in a row in which he did not win the race. Chris Amon had five career poles and never won a race. So at least Juan Pablo Montoya was better than that. But there's just so much to get to with what's going on at Ferrari right now. Is there like a first take of Italy I can watch?
I thought that was the entire Italian media apparatus. That just the whole thing is primo tacchi or whatever it is in Italian. Just a lot of this going on in the Ferrari garage.
Yes. Okay. So I need if anybody has any like Italian talk radio, Italian first take, like where they're just losing their minds over the performance issue, please send them to me. Because luckily we found around the time that Messi's contract expired last summer and then the summer before that, when there was some debate about that, we found the Spanish soccer first take. I'm excited to see the Italian first take. Please send it my way. we've made so many proclamations, Michael, over the first 3 months of this season. It looked like Red Bull was going to be the clowns who couldn't finish a race. And now it seems definitive that Ferrari are going to be the clowns. Different people, the clown wig has come for many people, but it seems permanently attached to Binotto. He said a couple of things. He said, basically, we have to see it. It's the sort of F1 version of we have to look at the tape, but they have to understand what the problems are. Scott Mitchell from The Race said something that I think is important, which he says he's never seen Leclerc as dejected as he's seen him today. Mm-hmm. He wore an expression of total frustration and a tone to match, according to Scott Mitchell. I don't know how you put on a brave face. He's done that. He did that on the first power failure a few races ago. But it's not just the power failure. It's the strategy failure in Monaco. It's just problem after problem after problem. Michael, let's be the Italian version of First Take. What's going on?
I mean, the car keeps breaking down. And you can't win if the car keeps breaking down. I hate to be reductive, but this is not only First Take, but this is Italian First Take. I mean, Leclerc's been driving the wheels off that car. He's been putting together a championship quality season, and the machinery just keeps letting him down, or the team mm-hmm. keeps letting him down. And you mentioned, you know, Red Bull looking like the clowns who couldn't finish early in the season. It has been a little weird. I never quite trusted Ferrari as like the calm, reliable, competent team based on how that team's been run for the past several seasons. And now it seems to be coming home to roost.
Seasons?
Well, I mean, they had that run. You mentioned there's a reason that Juan Pablo Montoya didn't win any of those races that he
No, I know. Pole. I'm just saying, so. I'm saying there've been ebbs and flows over, let's say, 60 years.
Yes. peaks and troughs. So I never quite trusted it, despite not having any reason to doubt Ferrari as good as they looked early in the season. And it's just I don't know how, if you're Charles Leclerc, you keep the stiff upper lip. You have to be frustrated. And I think it's appropriate for him to show frustration after so many failures in a row.
Let's just do this. All right. You know, actually, let's ask the second question first. Is Mercedes going to catch Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship?
That's a great question. I really don't know. Because it requires Mercedes to finally get a handle on mm-hmm. on their own technical problems, which has not been resulting in DNFs, but they've been resulting in George Russell finishing no higher than third every race this
right.
season.
But in top
Lewis
five,
Hamilton coming out of the car looking like he's 185 years old after having his teeth shaken out of his head. And like, that's not sustainable either. So the Ferrari's been so spectacularly unreliable in the last couple of races. I wrote about this earlier in the season with regard to Red Bull, that the first year of a new rule set always leads to more DNFs and more equipment failures. And we would have expected that this season, but even by those standards, it's incredible how the Ferraris keep blowing up. And, you know, we joked when Carlos Sainz went into the escape road that this was just, you know, a continuation of his string of bad luck, but it's not just them. It's the customer cars keep breaking down
yep.
too. And so that points to either it's a huge fluke or it's a huge issue that's going to submarine their entire season.
All right, let's do it. I didn't do it at the top. Let's do the mm-hmm. results here. Verstappen wins, Checo second, George Russell third, Hamilton fourth. Gasly had a nice drive, couldn't keep it up at the end. Basically, AlphaTauri wanted him to preserve the points. Hamilton passes him at the end. Seb Vettel sixth, he's back. Fernando Alonso seventh, he's back. By the way, did you see the thing that Toto Wolff said about Alonso?
No, what did he say about Alonso?
He said that everybody has admitted that porpoising is a problem in drivers' meetings except Alonso. The Chad Fernando Alonso does not see any problem with porpoising.
My theory on this is Fernando Alonso has the thickest neck in F1 and mm-hmm. is therefore most able to.
He's been doing those neck exercises for 20 years.
I talk about this video all the time. There's an old video of him cracking walnuts between his ear and his shoulder because his neck muscles are that strong. Like this is
as
like,
one does.
He looks like Takeo Spikes. So he probably is immune to porpoising.
We've just got a bunch of European listeners, like in Denmark right now, Googling Takeo spikes.
You think we've got European listeners? All right.
I've seen the numbers, brother. Huge in Denmark.
I just thought this was a Kevin Clark cult of personality podcast. So I thought it was a safe place to make NFL jokes.
Okay. So Ricardo eighth. What a 6, 7, and 8 between Vettel, Alonso, and Daniel Ricardo at 8. Beautiful. Lando Norris ninth, Ocon 10th. Notables. Obviously both Ferraris are out. Magnussen also out, Lance Stroll out, Zhou out. The most important thing here, as we just discussed, is it goes Red Bull engine 1, Red Bull engine 2, Red Bull engine 5. And obviously, Tsunoda had some problems there.
It probably would have been Red Bull engine 5 and 6 if Tsunoda's wing had not split in two. You mentioned going back to look at the tape.
Yeah. And then obviously, the Ferrari customers did not do particularly well. Really quickly on Tsunoda, since we brought him up, would you be comfortable driving a rocket ship around with duct tape holding together parts?
So, I thought about this, and it's interesting you bring up rocket ships, because I think about the first three spacecraft to land on the moon, Apollos 11, 12, and 14, and all three of those had like life-threatening errors at some point during the mission, and their response to those error messages were ignore it, turn it off, and turn it back on again, and hit it until it stops making the noise, and all of them were fine. So yes, I would feel safe driving a rocket ship around with duct tape on it.
Okay, so I want to get to what I think is Ferrari's biggest problem on Sunday, which is that even if Leclerc finishes the race, I don't think he wins that race, and I think Red Bull probably win comfortably. I saw Christian Horner's comments after the race, where basically what he said was, listen, Leclerc stopped really, really early, and so it would have been a 9-lap advantage with both cars in the Red Bull. Horner said we would have been in good shape, but obviously they didn't get to see it. Unlucky, as he puts it. He said it would have been fascinating to see it play out if Ferrari had not retired. But, you know, reading some of the tech guys afterwards, reading some of the guys who were there, it just looked like Red Bull had the pace. And I'm curious, at some point, are you just calling it, Michael?
Not this early, but at some point, okay. Yeah. I think I agree with that read that Red Bull probably would have been on for a 1-2, although the strategy offset would have given Leclerc a fighting chance. I think he was eating
at the win
game.
At the win or to
no
split
not
them?
Not probably not at the win, but to split the Red Bulls. Sainz was nowhere even before his car broke down.
I was talking about getting the win because I'm
getting
winner.
The win. So
that's why I'm built different.
Yeah, you are. You really are. You're all concerned with the win. Here I'm just for participation trophies.
She's not trying to beat George Russell here, okay?
Yeah.
Checo at the beginning did exactly what we wanted him to do. Went out and commanded the lead. Jos Verstappen punching the air somewhere after his midweek comments on MaxVerstappen.com.
Punching a Red Bull mechanic and getting getting the suit on and then screwing up Checo's pit stop to give Max a better chance at catching him.
The no fighting team orders came from a guy who sounds suspiciously like Jos Verstappen.
And a very angry older Dutchman.
Yeah. Coming, he actually called in on a cell phone. It's like, what's weird? Okay, some real quick stuff about Red Bull. Even though there was the no fighting radio message, that was kind of well after the fact. That wasn't strict team orders today. That was just Max having the pace advantage. Sergio Perez had significant tire degradation relative to Verstappen. I don't think this is some great tragedy. We're not going to litigate this like we did a couple weeks ago where they said give up. This is Max being better.
I think that's right. I think Checo took a lot of life out of those tires. I thought he was going to go lights to flag after he pulled out that huge lead in the first couple laps, but he ate up too much of his tires. And when I was surprised how quickly Max came back at him in like the lap 10 to 15 range. But even after the race, Checo seemed like this was the fair result that the no fighting order didn't have anything to do with it. And he, Verstappen won by 20 seconds. So there's not really much you could say about that.
Also, and this is okay, so let's go to the constructors. Let's do the driver championships and the constructor championship. So Max is at 150, Checo 129, Charles 116, George Russell 99, Carlos Sainz 83, Lewis 62, Lando 50. Constructors championship, Red Bull 279, Ferrari 199, Mercedes 160, big gap, McLaren 65. I think that with Checo, the Monaco win, I don't think Checo was going to win the driver's title. I don't think he thinks he was going to win the driver's title. The Monaco win kind of shuts up the haters a little bit. Any that he had, we obviously appreciate the hell out of Checo Perez. Shows how big of a part he is from this team after the embarrassment, I would say, how much his own team, I think he felt some embarrassment at Barcelona is the way I would put it. And they're going to win the Constructors' Championship pretty comfortably. So I think that Checo now is probably more comfortable than he was 2 weeks ago, to where taking a I agree with you, he looked pretty relaxed in the post race, getting a second and basically locking out the best of the rest who are not Ferrari as Ferrari retires. Like, that seems like a pretty good fate for him, and I think he's happy about it.
Yeah, and I think just having Monaco under his belt, even being a Grand Prix winner, yep, even, you know, finishing
that relatively. That was such a tone shifter.
Yeah, like that's a huge thing, and I think like that's a reputation-changing win, whether he's actually changed as a driver in the past couple of weeks or not, he's going to go down forever as having won Monaco. And I think that means a lot for somebody, for a driver like at his level of prestige. So, you know, he's racing with a lot of confidence right now. He's qualifying better than ever. He's closer to Verstappen than any teammate apart from Daniel Ricciardo at the very beginning of Verstappen's career has been. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he should feel good about where he is.
Disappointed in Leclerc's push off, get off at the front.
I was wondering, I saw that start from that same camera angle as the brake magic incident of 2021. It's like, yeah. Does Checo have a button, have like a make the guy beside me lock up button for that corner and that corner alone? You know, Checo was great off the line. I think he did get a little lucky with Leclerc, you know, going a little too deep on that first corner.
I agree. All right, let's talk about Red Bull. So they weren't perfect today. They had the slow pits. But this is what we say every week about this team, is that they just apply pressure. They're there to capitalize on mistakes. Ferrari's going to make a bunch of mistakes. They're going to immolate. They're going to self-immolate over there. And Red Bull's going to be there to do everything generally correctly and go 1-2. Like, there's almost nothing else to say about this Red Bull team except that they're going to be there when you mess up.
That's right. And I think it wasn't true at the beginning of the season, but I think it is now that Verstappen and the Red Bull at his peak is faster than Leclerc and the Ferrari at their peak. But just being that close and not making any mistakes, like, that's how you win championships. And I think it was Christian Horner who said this was a very mature drive from,
yeah, I saw
from
that.
Max. And, I think back to what we said after Miami, that it was just like that was a very competently executed race. And yep. I feel the same way about this outing.
It's the same race every single week. It's Ferrari screws up, Red Bull does just enough to win, and then Christian Horner gives 25 minutes on Sky, just mm-hmm. Right there. At some point, he's just going to start. Like, people, I literally get this question all the time. Does Christian Horner have a deal with Sky? Like, why is he on there all the time? At some point, he's just going to join them for the entirety of the race. He's just going to be in the booth with Crofty.
I mean, that's his greatest strength, that he's the thirstiest man in F1. And like, when so much of this is about, you know, living out the soap opera and giving people content, like, that's how your reputation gets made. And that's how your team gets marketed. He's more willing to do that than any other team principal.
Yes, but then I really don't want to talk about the Netflix show today, but he really did pull Toto Wolff into that. Like, he pulled him down. They're rolling around in the mud now because Horner got to him so much that now Toto Wolff and Christian Horner are rolling around in the mud perpetually.
It's like, and here's a reference that's gonna really endear us to not just the NFL crossover fans, but the Europeans. But like, Christian Horner is the Claude Lemieux of of F1 team principals.
Americans barely get that one.
Yeah, it's
no. Okay, so reason I brought that up is we have another volley in that particular war. I don't know if you saw it after the mm-hmm. race. Horner said, was talking about the porpoising, and this is a way to get into the porpoising. It is the biggest issue in F1 right now. It's a safety issue. Toto Wolff said afterwards that, I mean, they're looking at reserve drivers. And that happened a couple weeks ago with Jewelrygate too. So it's not the first time that Nyck de Vries name has popped up.
Nyck de Vries, watching Hamilton get out of the car, my first thought was Nyck de Vries is going to sneak into his home and sabotage his mattress.
He's going to replace his chiropractor.
Yeah.
Okay. So that basically Lewis Hamilton and George Russell were so beat up after that race. And I want to put a pin in that. But what Horner said afterwards is basically he thinks that Mercedes drivers are being coached to moan. The word he used was bitch as much as they could on the radio, make a big issue out of it and sort of see it. Now, Horner admitted, and this is something of course Horner would do, that is sort of, you know, working the refs has always been a part of the sport. That's what they're doing now. That's not new. Mercedes didn't invent that this morning, okay? However, Horner says he thinks that limiting the porpoising would be an unfair disadvantage to teams that don't have a lot of porpoising. I think we know who he's talking about. He's talking about the Red Bull. And he's basically saying you have a choice. It's not basically, this is the quote, you have a choice where you run your car. You should never run a car that's unsafe. But I think that's more for the technical guys. There are certain cars that have issues. He's talking about ride height, okay? And he's saying that you can slow down, change the ride height, and you won't bounce down the straights anymore. Before we get into the safety of it, before we get into the driver complaints, where do you come down on this debate? Should F1 do something about porpoising going forward?
So this is the archetypal Christian Horner extemporaneous speech because one,
but I want to stop you right there. I love Christian Horner, and I think people sometimes mistake us sort of pointing out his his thirstiness with you know, not being turned away from him. No, like we are all of us are thirsty. We're all podcasters, for God's sakes. We understand thirst better than anybody. This is a pro Christian Horner podcast. Go ahead, Michael.
So, he just overshares, but two, he's mostly right. I agree with him that like there is an extent to which Mercedes is doing this to themselves by, you know, they're sacrificing driver comfort and perhaps safety to go a little bit faster. I think he makes that point, but he also does it in a way that makes him look like a giant douchebag. And it's like, it's just so perfectly Christian Horner. I love this answer, but I, you know, I'm not as Christian Horner positive as you are, but I generally come down with him on this side of this argument.
I will say that it was a tough look for me to say this is a pro Christian Horner podcast. And then within 15 seconds, he called him a douchebag.
Well, we could talk about that after the show, but
it takes all kinds. It takes all kinds here on the Ringer F1 show. All right. So let's get into the porpoising and what this looks like. So woof. So Lewis Hamilton said his adrenaline was the only thing that kept him going. He was biting down on his teeth. George Russell said something similar that basically, I mean, they're worried about teeth damage because of how much they're bouncing. We already heard the Daniel Ricciardo quote and analogy about that. His quote, this is Lewis Hamilton, "I can't express the pain that you experience, particularly on the straight." And he said he was, quote, "praying for it to end." At one point, Lewis Hamilton said his seat's gone cold. Basically, his butt was numb from all of this. This is a driver safety issue. So Toto Wolff apologized to Hamilton after the race and said, "I know this is a bit of a shitbox to drive. Sorry for that." Andrew Shovlin, I saw the engineer, was quoted afterwards basically saying, they're going to look at it. The bumpier tracks are a particular problem. And Montreal is not especially smooth. So this is not a one-week fix. I got to be honest with you. In most cases, I would say the reserve driver thing is just to scare the F1 or whatever, the FIA, into changing something. You're going from Azerbaijan to Montreal in a week. You're going to a track that, I mean, it's not a street circuit, so it's not extremely bumpy, but as Shovlin said, it's not particularly smooth. Listen, Wolf said that Hamilton is, quote, in really bad shape and we've got to find a solution. He might be the worst affected from our drivers, Hamilton. And I wouldn't be surprised if this takes such a toll that Lewis Hamilton at some point misses a race this year.
I would. Definitely this early, I would be surprised if it misses a race.
Well, but it might be actually injured. He might be actually injured.
That's true. I mean, the thing that I keep thinking back to, I think Kern Chanhook said this on the broadcast, that some of these like impacts as the car is bottoming out is 6 Gs. And you think about just experiencing that over and over and over and over down the straight for 51 laps. Like, yeah.
Top Gun. That's like Top Gun.
It's almost worse than Top Gun because it's just that like that juddering. And so you imagine what it would do to Lewis Hamilton's back. And but these guys are so competitive that like I struggle to think of the level of discomfort that they wouldn't tolerate once they get into the car. And so I think it would take something like God forbid a stress fracture or something from all this.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. First of all, I want to make a Ferrari joke about Top Gun, which is that one Ferrari finishes the race, that's miracle number one. A second Ferrari finishes the race, that's miracle number two. Okay. But the more serious injuries is what I'm talking about. Wolf said afterwards that it's not muscular. He was talking about the spine and he's talking about consequences from that. I'm not saying that they're going to go, I'm a little sore. This isn't baseball. This is in the sport you cover where they go, I got a little tightness. I'm going to take it off today. Cause they play 162 games and then they play one game playoffs, which render everything moot. But this isn't that. I'm talking about long-term where like a doctor says like, dude, you can't get in that car. And this is not Rush. This is not 1973. Like at some point, if someone is just fighting for P6, they're going to say, doc says I got to go.
Yeah. Nick DeVries, your back is expendable. Get your ass in the car.
He's so short.
I know.
The spine is shorter.
I don't know. If they bounce enough, maybe Nick DeVries will be taller than George Russell by the end of the season.
That's a lot. That'd be a lot of bounce.
Yeah, it's a lot of compression.
All right. Anything else on Mercedes? I mean, George Russell continues to make the most out of this, as Toto Wolff says, shitbox.
He's doing great. I mean, just they called him Mr. Consistency over the radio, which I guess you can only go so far from your first nickname. But I mean, he's been in the top five every single race. He's going to pass Charles Leclerc at some point if the Ferrari keeps breaking down. So good for him. George Russell living his best life. We love to see it.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
We got a question. I don't want to do listener questions yet, but we got a question, which was, is anyone this season outside of Ferrari and Red Bull going to finish in the top two?
Yeah, it'll happen at some point. I'm actually a little surprised that Mercedes hasn't gotten in there already, but or they'll run into one track where one of these midfield teams just has it. It'll happen at some point. It always does. The season's just too long.
I agree. I don't know the path. Also, there's just going to be almost like Azerbaijan last year, right? Where it's just like, there's just going to be chaos races or, you know, the top two, Leclerc and Verstappen make contact at the front. Like there's just too much that happens over the course of the season. I would say it's going to happen multiple times, frankly. I'm not too concerned about a 1-2 sweep.
The past couple seasons where we had pretty chalky, I guess two drivers dominating the entire season in both cases. There were something like 13 or 14 podium finishers in each of the last two seasons. So that'll happen again.
Yeah, and Daniel Ricciardo won a race. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like weird stuff happens.
Seems like 100 years ago.
It does. McLaren's last winner.
Mm-hmm.
Count the rings. I'm a member of rings culture.
You're all about winning. I deeply
value it. Let's do some odds and ends here. Latifi's penalty for getting a push on the grid. I saw it. I don't know how this happened. I was looking for answers and I didn't find any. Felt like maybe somebody didn't know the rules or maybe there was just some desperation. There was just an engineer out there and he just gave the car a little push because I guess Latifi went over the line.
Went over the line, yeah. Moved him back.
What's going on at Williams, dude?
Would anybody have noticed that Nicholas Latifi got a stop-go penalty?
That's my question.
So, like, oh, we're 7 laps into the race and he's 38 seconds off of 19th place. It's just business as usual.
He finishes 15th ahead of only the...
I saw him on the grid. He was rocking, like, a little bit of, like, a 5 o'clock shadow, and I thought that was, like, a whole, like, persona-changing styling decision. I was... All in to watch Nicholas Latifi get into the points just based on the stubble, but it's same as it ever was.
He crushed it. Schumacher 14th, the aforementioned duct taped Yuki Tsunoda 13th, Albon 12th, Bottas 11th. Anybody else on the grid stand out to you, Michael Bauman?
I thought AlphaTauri, I was surprised they didn't pit one of their two drivers under that last caution. I thought it would have been smart to split the strategies there just based on how quickly Hamilton came back on them. And it ended up not mattering with Tsunoda's wing coming apart. There was a lot of... it was a chippy radio day for McLaren. I think that bears mentioning, where both drivers seemed to think that they were clearly faster than their teammate. And in the end, neither of them could get past Fernando Alonso. So I think that just speaks to the general sense of malaise, going on with the orange team right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just glad Ricardo gave us something so that we don't every week on the midweek pods have to say, what's the future of Daniel Ricardo? Just something.
Points. I guess
I'm into points.
Yeah. He had a pulse this week, which is good.
Yes. He's back.
Yeah. So I guess on some level, based on like how bad things have gone at one point or another, a double points finish for McLaren, they'll take that. But it just seemed a little messy how they got there.
We got three questions. I'm not sure why this week we got the same three questions. Or the same. We had 90 questions. Three of them were the exact same. Is Ferrari the Dallas Cowboys? And I don't think so. They're kind of
Ferrari's won a title in the past 30 years. So
they're kind of Clemson.
Past 25 years. So
the sound you hear is a bunch of podcast apps in Denmark being closed.
They're not Denmark's team. That's for sure.
We got this. A lot of people just saying what's going on with Ferrari. We already got to that. They don't know. Grid penalties are in play at this point because of all the problems with the power unit.
Bottas is on power unit number 3 already. So that's, that'll start happening.
I'm talking about for Ferrari. I'm talking about things that matter.
Yeah.
Not Botas can do whatever he needs
the,
to do.
The battle for fourth in the constructors is just not even on your radar.
Wallace asks, when do we start talking about Binotto's job security? I bet in Italy that started, that probably started in March in Italy of 2020.
Yeah, like maybe there just aren't enough like nerdy looking engineers. Like maybe they've run through them all already. Like there's just nobody left to take the job.
Oh, man. All right. This was great. Canada next week. You amped?
Yeah, I like that track a lot. That's they've had some fun races there. So and it's, you know, being back there for the first time. We weren't there last year, weren't there the year before that. So yeah. Always love to go back to Montreal.
It's good for Canada to have something in June since they never have teams in the cup final.
Yeah, that's true. I was trying, you know? Man, when Latifi and Stroll both DNF'd, I was trying to come up with a, it's been so long since the Stanley Cup or since a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup joke. And I've made them all already. There are none left. Sorry about your Rangers, by the way. It's been a rough weekend for the entire F1 community.
It's been tough. Tim Horaney's going to just come into the Zoom and just start getting very upset about us slandering Canadian drivers.
It's not slander Canada. If it's true.
Yeah. Stroll is at least better than Latifi.
Yes.
So, I don't know. All right. Thank you to Michael Bauman. Thank you to Erica Cervantes for production help. We will be back sometime this week. This has been the Ringer F1 Show on the Ringer Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.